it's me back in Manitoba many moons ago.
It's a little different this week on Abandoned Manitoba. Gordon Goldsborough likes to shake things up on a Sunday morning. Hi, Gordon.
Good morning, Nadia.
So what are we doing this week?
Well, I just want to harken back to last week. You know, we talked about an architect named William Bruce, and back in 1912, he proposed an ambitious plan to build a huge city on Hudson Bay. And yet today he's forgotten. And that made me think about other people who, like Mr. Bruce, have slid into obscurity through the years. And it reminds me of an old belief that people die twice. Once when you stop breathing, and twice when everyone has forgotten you. Well, the Manitoba Historical Society is trying to counteract this tendency.
Oh, so it seems like you're, you know, spreading your wings and trying to make people immortal. Is that the situation?
Well, in a manner of speaking, yes. You know, we're developing an online collection of short biographies of noteworthy people that we call Memorable Manitobans. We started about a dozen years ago, and to date, the collection contains nearly 12,000 biographies. Now, the one essential criterion is that the person must be deceased. Otherwise, it's a fairly diverse collection. It includes artists, clerics, politicians, professionals, military personnel, community elders, and much more. And each biography gives such important information as when and where they were born, activities for which they should be remembered, and when and where they died.
How did the collection start?
It started right back in 1971. The Manitoba Library Association published a book then, and it contained biographies of noteworthy people. And then the late historian Jack Bumstead updated that with his 1999 book called Dictionary of Manitoba Biography. Well, today we have Wikipedia, but it usually only contains biographies of people who are internationally famous. So I obtained permission from the publishers of those two books to use them to start building an online collection to profile Manitobans who, regrettably, will never be found on Wikipedia. With help from people all around the world, those biographies are now much richer than the brief entries that were in those two original books. They've been augmented with photos. They've been cross-referenced to other pages on the extensive MHS website. It's really becoming an extensive resource.
Can you give us a few examples of these memorable Manitobans?
Well, yeah, I'm going to choose ones that I think probably few of our listeners have heard of. The first is a fellow named Harvey Kavanagh. He was born in Ontario in 1886 and came to Western Canada at the age of 25. He began working in the grain trade, as many people did in those days, and eventually he would manage a company that operated grain elevators across the prairies. In 1925, Harvey Kavanagh founded his own firm called the Red River Grain Company. And 2 years later, that company introduced a new product for the breakfast tables of Manitoba, a hot porridge made from a mixture of wheat, rye, and flax. It was called Red River Cereal. And many people today still swear by its low-fat, high-fiber benefits. In 1927, 2 years after launching Red River Cereal, Kavanagh sold it to a competitor, and it's changed hands several times through the years, but it's still available. Meanwhile, Mr. Kavanagh moved to Vancouver, where he worked in real estate. He died there in 1962.
Okay, so now I know of Mr. Kavanagh and the Red River Cereal. This is a good start. Do you have another one?
Well, like Kavanagh, Florence McGregor was also born in Ontario in 1890. She came here to Winnipeg at the age of 22. She later married and had a daughter, and she became one of the few women entrepreneurs of her time in the 1920s when she founded the Clearex Manufacturing Company. Now, its primary product was something called Clearex, and it was aimed at the treatment of skin afflictions. You know, things like eczema, psoriasis, pimples, boils, and poison ivy. The active ingredient in Clearex was mercury, which, while effective for its intended purposes, also had major side effects due to its general toxicity. Sadly, Florence McGregor died at the young age of 44, and I have to wonder if the toxicity of her own product was a contributing cause, because her husband took over the business, and he died just 8 years later at 53. And I wonder if he wasn't another victim of mercury poisoning.
So one of the people that you mentioned in last week's hint, best name ever, stayed with me, Ginger Snook. Sounds like a bit of a scoundrel. I don't know if that's true. What was his story?
Well, Albert Snook was born in England in 1835, and he arrived here in Manitoba in 1882. Initially, he didn't find any work, so he joined a construction gang that was building the Canadian Pacific Railway, and he headed west. In fact, Mr. Snook claimed to have helped join the westbound tracks to the eastbound tracks, and to his dying day, he kept a wrench that he had used to do the job. Well, the railway is finished, and Snook returns to Manitoba, and he squats in a shack in downtown Winnipeg. He becomes a scavenger, picking up items off the street, some of which were useful, and others that he took to the dump. Now, Mr. Snook was known for his quick wit, and he became famous for his attendance at city council meetings, where he heckled the councillors about perceived corruption and derelictions of duty. Well, it was his sharp tongue that earned him the nickname of Ginger, based upon the spicy vegetable. So when Ginger Snook died in 1926, his funeral was attended by over 150 people, including some of the same prominent people that he had lampooned.
So quite a trajectory then, from squatting in a shack and being a scavenger to a prominent funeral like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, these people sound like they did generally kind of admirable things. Is that what it takes to become a memorable Manitoban?
It is true that the examples I've given so far have been, you know, in some way commendable. But I emphasize that memorable, as in memorable Manitobans, only means staying in our memories. And that does not exclude some real scoundrels.
Such as?
Well, one fellow whose name I quite like, and I think you'll understand the reasons why, was a fellow named Lord Gordon Gordon.
Perfect. That's what I'm calling you from now on.
Biographical details are fuzzy, but Lord Gordon Gordon was born in the UK around 1840. He went to New York City, and in 1872, he is believed to have swindled the famous businessman Jay Gould of $1 million. And of course, in those days, $1 million was huge. Later that year, he turns up in Winnipeg, I guess because it was kind of on an outpost at that time. He thought maybe he'd be safe there, where he claimed to be a member of the Scottish nobility. And in fact, there's even photos of him in full Scottish regalia, including the kilt and everything. In July of 1873, he was kidnapped by bounty hunters that were hoping to collect on a reward that had been offered by Gould, but they were foiled, and Lord Gordon Gordon escaped. So just a little while later, he's living in a boarding house at Headingley when police try to arrest him for extradition to New York. I guess his shady past had finally caught up with him. But instead, he escaped justice by shooting himself in the head, and he was quietly buried on the edge of the Anglican cemetery in Headingley. Well, supposedly, because of the manner of his death, Lord Gordon Gordon was denied burial within its formal boundaries. And in fact, there is no formal monument to mark his grave. So we're not absolutely sure that Lord Gordon Gordon is in fact buried at that cemetery there.
So what if some of our listeners want to suggest someone to be added to memorable Manitobans?
There is a list of criteria on the Manitoba Historical Society website. And if someone feels they have a good candidate who's not already in the collection, please contact me. We want to ensure that anyone who we genuinely want to remember is included. And if there's anyone out there who's interested in helping to write biographies, we're most grateful for the assistance, you know, because the reality is we have developed the collection entirely by volunteer help. So we're always grateful when somebody's willing to help us.
How long has it taken? Like, when did you start this project of putting these together?
Well, it started in an informal way, probably about 15 years ago, but it really began in earnest about a dozen years ago. And it kind of develops in leaps and bounds sometimes, and then it slows down. The pace of it really does change over the years. Lately, for example, I've been getting about maybe a dozen a week. So it does grow, you know, slowly as I have time to put in entries into it.
12,000. Incredible endeavor. So congratulations to all the volunteers who are doing this. Such an important work. Gordon, what's up for next week?
Well, when we think about the word shed, we usually envision a very simple building in which we store things like tools and other equipment. We do not typically think of sheds as places where people live. But next week, we're going to talk about a few noteworthy sheds that were very important as residences.
Sounds good, Gordon. We'll chat next week.
Thanks very much. We'll talk next week. Bye-bye.
No matter where I go, every time the wind blows, puts me back in Manitoba. Many moons.